This is disc number 19.
Richard imagined that a victim of such a web would not be able to recognize the glamour spell within himself. And it was certainly true that nearly everyone was coming to think he was crazy. Truth does not depend on the person who says it. The truth is still the truth, even if stated by someone you don't respect. That may be true, Richard, but others don't necessarily act with such clear insight. He sighed. I guess not. As far as the beast, Jigang does not necessarily count on just one thing to do the job, and he has no reluctance to do more than is necessary to crush his opponents. He might have figured that two plagues will be more certain to end the threat of Richard Rawl than one alone. Richard certainly didn't doubt what she said about Jigang. Still, he didn't believe it. Jigang didn't even know where I was. Those troops just happened to cross me as they were sweeping the woods, checking for threat for their supply convoy. He knows you started the revolt down in Altarang. He might have ordered that his troops in the area carry arrows that were spelled by his sisters just in case they ran across you. Richard could see that she had indeed been doing a lot of thinking. She had an answer for everything. He opened his arms out to the side and lifted his chin. Then lay your hands on me, sorceress. Grab the spell and pull its wicked tentacles out of me. Restore my sanity. If you really believe that a glamour spell is the cause of all this, then use your gift to seek it out and put an end to it. Nikki turned her gaze away and stared out the broken doorway to the gloom within the base of the huge tower. To do that, I would need the arrow. It no longer exists. I'm sorry, Richard. I never thought to check the arrow for a spell before I eliminated it. I was frantic to get it out of you in order to save your life. Still, I should have checked. He laid a hand on the back of her shoulder. You didn't do anything wrong, my friend. You saved my life. Did I? She turned to him. Or did I condemn you to a living death? He shook his head. I don't think so. Like you said, you wouldn't let me believe something if you thought the evidence was insufficient. That body buried down there wasn't sufficient proof. Yet at the same time, it shouldn't have been there, so I'm convinced that it proves that something really is going on. I just haven't figured out what. Or it proves that maybe your story is nothing more than part of a fabrication spawned by the mad obsession of a glamour spell. No one remembers what happened, and that Kaelin isn't buried there, but I do. It's something solid that shows me, at least, that I'm not imagining all this. Or it is simply part of the delusion, whatever its cause. Richard, this just can't go on forever. It has to come to a close at some point. You're at a dead end. Have you come up with anything else to try? He put his hands on the stone wall of the Slif's well. Look, Nikki, I admit that I'm running out of ideas. But I'm not ready to give up on her, to give up on her life. She means too much to me to do that. And how long do you think you can wander around not giving up on her, all the while the Imperial Order marches ever closer to our forces? I don't like Anne's meddling in my life any more than you like her meddling in yours. But she isn't doing it because she is trying to be malicious. She's trying to preserve freedom. She's trying to save innocent people from being slaughtered by brutes. Richard swallowed back the lump in his throat. I need to think about things, to gather my thoughts. I found some books in that room back there. I want to study them for a while, just a while, and try to think things through. Try to see if I can figure out what's happening and why. If I can't think of something, I just need to think of what to do next. And if you can't think of what to do next? Richard leaned on both hands as he stared off into the dark well, doing his best to stifle his tears. Please. If he only knew who to fight. If only he could strike out at an enemy. He didn't know how to fight shadows in his mind. Nikki laid a hand gently on his shoulder. All right, Richard. All right. Chapter 55. Nikki knocked on the round-top oak door and waited. Rika, standing at her back, waited with her.
"Come in," came a muffled voice.
Nikki thought that it sounded like Nathan's deep, powerful voice rather than Zed's. Inside the small, round room that Richard's grandfather was fond of using, she saw the prophet along with Anne, her hands pushed into opposite sleeves of her simple, dark gray dress as she stood patiently waiting for their invited guest. Nathan, in dark brown trousers and high boots, with a ruffled white shirt under a sweeping cloak, looked more like an adventurer than a prophet. Zed, in his simple robes, stood quietly at a round leaded window between book cabinets with glassed doors, his hands clasped behind his back. He appeared to be lost in thought as he gazed out at the city of Adendrill far below at the base of the mountain. It was a beautiful view. Nikki could understand why he favored the cozy room. Rika started pushing the thick oak door closed.
"Rika, dear,"
Anne said with a prelate's practiced smile, drawing the Mord Sith's attention.
"My throat is still terribly dry from all that smoke yesterday when that dreadful creature set the library ablaze. Would you mind making me some tea, maybe with a spot of honey?"
Rika, holding the half-closed door, shrugged.
"Not at all."
"Any of your biscuits left?" Nathan asked with a wide smile. "Your biscuits were wonderful, especially when they're warm."
Rika gazed briefly at everyone in the small room.
"I will bring biscuits and tea, along with some honey."
"Thank you so much, my dear,"
Anne said, the smile never breaking, as Rika vanished out the door. Zed, still watching out the window, hadn't said anything. Nikki, ignoring Anne and Nathan, instead turned and addressed Zed.
"Rika said that you wanted to see me."
"That's right," Anne said in his place.
"Where is Richard?"
"Down in that place I told you about, the place he found between the shields where he will be safe. He is reading, looking for information, doing what a seeker does, I suppose."
With exaggerated care, Nikki folded her fingers together.
"So the three of you want to talk to me about Richard?"
Nathan huffed a short laugh that transformed itself into a throat-clearing cough when Anne glanced his way. Zed, standing with his back to the rest of them, stared out the window without saying anything.
"You always were a bright one," Anne said.
"It wasn't exactly a guess that required great intellect," Nikki said, not wanting to allow Anne to get away with such empty flattery.
"If you please, withhold your praise until I do something to deserve it."
Both Nathan and Anne smiled. Nathan's even looked genuine. Flattery had been a plague that had followed Nikki her whole life. "Nikki, you're such a bright child, so you must give more of yourself." "Nikki, you're so beautiful, the most beautiful creature I've ever seen. I must hold you." "Nikki, my dear, I simply must be allowed to sample your exquisite charms, or I will surely die an impoverished man." To Nikki, vacuous flattery was the sound of a pry bar, a tool used by a thief as he tried to get at what she had.
"What is it I can do for you?" Nikki asked in a businesslike voice.
Anne, hands still pushed up opposite sleeves, shrugged.
"We need to talk to you about Richard's unfortunate condition. It was quite shocking to discover him suffering from delirium."
"I can't say I disagree with that," Nikki said.
"Do you have any ideas?" the prelate asked.
Nikki glided her fingers back and forth across the polished top of the magnificent desk.
"Ideas? What do you mean, ideas?"
"Don't play coy," Anne said, her indulgent humor evaporating from her voice. "You know very well what we mean."
Zed finally turned around, apparently not liking Anne's tack.
"Nikki, we're very worried about him.
Yes, we're worried because of the prophecy, and that it says he must be the one to lead our forces and all the rest of it, but..."
He lifted a hand and let it drop in frustration.
"But we're worried for Richard himself. There is something very wrong with him. I've known him from the day he was born. I've spent years with him, alone with him around others. I've been so proud of that boy that I can't begin to tell you. He has always been one to occasionally do puzzling things, things that frustrate and confuse me. But I've never seen him act like this. I've never seen him believe such crazy stories. You can't imagine what it does to me to see him like this.
Nicky scratched an eyebrow, using it as an excuse to look away from the pain in his hazel eyes. His white hair looked in even more disarray than usual. He looked more thin than usual. He looked gaunt. He looked like a man who had not gotten much sleep for weeks.
I think I can understand your feelings, she assured him. She took a deep, thoughtful breath as she slowly shook her head. I don't know, Zed. I've been trying to figure it out since I found him that morning gasping for breath and almost in the keeper's clutches.
You said he had lost a lot of blood, Nathan said, and that he was unconscious for days.
Nicky nodded. It's possible that such a condition, such desperate fear of not having enough breath and thinking he was going to die that way, caused him to dream up someone who loved him, a kind of trick to try to calm himself. I used to sometimes do something similar when I was afraid. I would put my mind in another else, a pleasant place where I was safe, with Richard, with the heavy loss of blood and the abnormally long sleep after being healed, while he was regaining some of his strength, enough strength to try to survive the ordeal. Well, I think that the whole time the dream could have grown and grown in his mind.
And has taken over his thoughts, Anne finished.
Nicky met her gaze.
That was my thought.
And now? Zed asked.
Nicky turned her eyes up to gaze at the heavy oak beams across the ceiling as she searched for words.
I don't know anymore. I'm no expert in such things. I've not exactly spent my life as a healer. I would think that the three of you would know a great deal more about such maladies than I do.
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, Anne said, making a face like she was glad to hear Nicky admit as much.
We would tend to agree with that assessment.
Nicky eyed all three of them suspiciously. So, what do all of you think is his problem?
Well, Zed began. We're still not ready to rule out a number of things that...
Have you considered a glamour spell? Anne asked, fixing Nicky in her steady stare the way she used to do to make novices tremble and confess to shirking their chores. Nicky was no novice and no longer susceptible to such intimidation from on high. After having Jagang, in a blind rage, hold her with one meaty fist around her throat and pound her face with the other... A stare was hardly something to make Nicky tremble. In fact, had the subject not been one so serious, one that sincerely did concern her so, she might have laughed at the very effort of such a stern look to elicit an incautious report.
It crossed my mind, she said, seeing no purpose in denying it, but I had to eliminate the arrow with subtractive magic if I was to save his life. I'm afraid that, at the time, I never gave any thought to such an idea. I was frantically trying to keep him from dying. Perhaps I should have thought about the arrow being spelled, but I didn't. With the arrow now gone, there is no way to tell if that really was the case, and without the arrow, there's no way to do anything about it if true.
Zed rubbed his clean, shaven jaw as he looked away.
That certainly makes things more difficult.
Difficult, Nicky said.
Such a spell isn't at all easy to reverse, even if you have the object that in this manner infected the victim with a glamour. Without that object, only the sorceress who cast the glamour can eliminate it. You must have the web that carried the infection if you are to heal it. And that's if you know for certain that it was a glamour spell. It could be something else, whatever it is, spell of some sort or delirium, you have to know the cause if you're to heal it.
Not necessarily, Anne said as she again stared at Nicky. At this point, the cause is no longer much of an issue.
Nicky's brow twitched.
No longer an issue?
What in the world are you talking about? If a person has a broken arm, you set it and splint it. You don't waste your time running around asking questions, trying to figure out exactly how they managed to break their arm. You need to take action to correct the ailment. Talk won't correct it.
"We think he needs our help," Zed offered in a more conciliatory tone. "We all know that the things he is saying are flat impossible. At first, when he said that he gave the Sword of Truth to Shota, I thought he had done something profoundly foolish. But I've come to see that his actions weren't willful, nor were the dimensions of them so simply grasped. I reacted with an angry reprimand when I should have seen how ill he really is and dealt with it in that context. There are times when you can see how someone might come to believe something odd. But Richard's behavior is far beyond anything that could remotely be described as odd. It's become clear that he is delusional, and we all now realize as much."
He opened his hands in a beseeching gesture.
"Is there anything at all you can say in his behalf that makes any sense, and that demonstrates how we may be wrong in our analysis?"
Zed looked truly under great distress. It was obvious how genuinely concerned he was for his grandson. Nikki turned her eyes downward, unable to look into the hurt in his eyes.
"I'm sorry, Zed, but I know of nothing that makes any sense. Unfortunately, I don't think that the body he dug up proves anything conclusively, or we might have a chance to force him to accept the reality of the evidence. On the other hand, I think the body he dug up really was the Mother Confessor Kaelin Amnell, the woman that he dreamed he had a relationship with while in his confused state of pain when he was injured. He probably heard the name somewhere when he first traveled to the Midlands, and it just stuck in his mind. It was probably a nice fantasy. For someone who grew up to be a woods guide, I think it would be a natural enough daydream, like imagining that he might one day go off to a strange land and marry a queen. But then it turned into a dream while he was hurt, and then into an obsession."
Nikki had to make herself stop. It hurt to the bone to say such things to other people about Richard, even if those other people also loved and cared about him and wanted to help him. Even Anne, as much as Nikki often thought the woman had ulterior motives, really did care a great deal about Richard. He was a man Anne believed was necessary to fulfill prophecy, but she still felt warmly toward him as an individual. Nikki knew she was doing the right thing in what she said about Richard, but it still made her feel like she was betraying him. She could see his face in her mind, watching, silently hurt, that she would be so coldly unbelieving.
"We think that, whatever the cause of his false belief," Anne said, "Richard needs to be brought back to reality."
Nikki didn't say anything. While she thought they were right, she didn't know that there was anything that could be done other than letting him, as time went on, arrive at the truth on his own. Nathan took a step forward and smiled down at Nikki. In the small room, he seemed even more imposing, but it was his dark azure eyes that were so riveting. He spread his hands in a gesture of open appeal.
"Sometimes it hurts a person to help them. But later they see how it was the only way, and then when they are finally well, they're happy that you did as had to be done."
"Like setting a broken arm," Anne offered, nodding to Nathan's words. "No one wants to go through the pain of having that done, but sometimes such things are necessary, if they are to be well and have their life back."
"So," Nikki asked with a frown,
"you want to heal him?"
"That's right," Zed told her.
He smiled, then,
"I found a prophecy about Richard that says, they will at first contest him before they plot to heal him. I never thought it would come to pass so soon or
in quite this manner, but I think we all agree that we love Richard and want him well and back with us as himself."
Nicky thought that there must be more to this than what any of them were saying. She began to wonder why they had sent Rika off for tea. Why exactly would they not want the Lord Rawl's bodyguard around?
"I told you I'm not exactly a healer."
"You did quite a good job of healing him when he was shot with that arrow," Zed said. "Even I could not have accomplished such a feat. None of us in this room other than you, Nicky, could have accomplished such a thing. You may not think you are much of a healer, but you were able to do what would have been impossible for any of us."
"Well, I was only successful because I used subtractive magic."
No one said anything. They all just stared at her.
"Wait a minute," Nicky said, looking from one person to the next. "Are you suggesting that I again somehow use subtractive magic on Richard?"
"That's exactly what we're suggesting," Zed told her.
Anne flicked a hand out toward Zed and Nathan.
"If one of us could do it, we would, but we can't. We need you to do it."
Nicky folded her arms.
"Do what exactly? I don't understand what it is you expect me to do."
Anne laid a hand on Nicky's arm.
"Nicky, listen to us. We don't know what is causing Richard's malady. We have no way of trying to cure something when we don't know what it is. Even if we knew for sure that it was a glamour spell that had tainted that arrow, short the one who cast such a web, or absent the arrow, none of the three of us could eliminate the spell. But we can't be certain it was such a spell, or an entirely different kind of spell. Or if it's simply delirium brought on by the injury, we don't know the cause, we may never know."
"What must be done now?" she said in a serious manner that no longer tried to be anything but straightforward and honest,
"is to eliminate the obsession, whatever its origin. It doesn't matter if it was brought about by a spell, a dream, or by some sudden onset of insanity. The memory of this woman, Kaelin, is a false memory that is distorting his thinking and therefore must be eliminated from his mind."
Nicky was stupefied by what she was hearing. She looked from the former prelate to Zed.
"Are you seriously suggesting that I use subtractive magic on your grandson's mind? You want me to eliminate a part of his consciousness, a part of who he is?"
"No, not part of who he is, never. I would never want that."
Zed licked his thin lips. His voice came out sounding helpless and despairing.
"I want you to heal him. I want Richard back, the Richard I know, the Richard we all know, the real Richard. Not the Richard with these foreign notions taking over his mind and destroying him."
Nicky shook her head. "I can't do that to the man I..." She closed her mouth before she finished the sentence.
"I would have back the Richard I love," Zed said in soft supplication. "The Richard we all love."
Nicky backed away a step, shaking her head, unable to think of what to say to such desperation. There had to be another way to bring Richard to his senses.
"Show her," Nathan said to Anne, his voice suddenly sounding very much like the towering prophet he was, the Rawl he was.
Anne nodded in resignation and pulled something from a pocket. She held it out to Nicky.
"Read this."
When Anne dropped it into Nicky's hand, she saw that it was a journey book. She looked up at Nathan, Anne, and finally Zed.
"Go on," the prophet said. "Read the message Anne received from Verna."
Journey books were incredibly rare. In fact, Nicky had thought they had all been destroyed at the Palace of the Prophets. She knew that what was written in one of the matched pair of twinned books would appear in the other. The stylus kept in the spine that was used to write in the book was also used to wipe away old messages. In that way, the journey books never wore out or became obsolete.
Nikki opened the invaluable product of ancient magic and turned to the writing.
"Anne," it began in a clear hand, "I fear to report that things are not going well with our forces. Where is Richard? Have you found him yet? I apologize for pressing you yet again, for I know you are traveling with all due haste, but the problems with the army grow more serious every day. Men have deserted, not a great many, mind you, but we are in Dahara now, and the whispers are growing that Lord Rawl will not lead them in a battle that they all believe will be suicide. Richard's continuing absence only confirms this fear for them. Day by day they grow to feel they have been abandoned by their Lord Rawl. None of the men believe that they have a chance against the enemy if Richard is not with his own troops to lead them. General Myford and I grow more desperate by the day as to what to tell disheartened men. Even if there was good reason, it is still difficult enough for men knowing they face death not to have word from the first leader in their lives whom they truly believe in. Please, Anne, as soon as you reach Richard, tell him how much all these brave young men who have borne the brunt of defending our cause for so long and have suffered so much need him. Please find out how soon he will join us. Ask him to please hurry. Urgently awaiting word. Yours in the light, Verna." The book lowered in Nikki's hands. Tears stung her eyes. Anne lifted the journey book from Nikki's trembling fingers. "What would you have me tell Verna? What would you have her say to the troops?" Anne asked in a quiet, even gentle tone. Nikki blinked at the tears. "You want me to take away his mind? You want me to betray him?"
"No, not at all," Zed assured her, gripping her shoulder in his powerful fingers. "We want you to help him, to heal him."
"We fear to even approach Richard in his present condition," Anne said. "We fear he may suspect something. I'm afraid I'm partly responsible for that because of my harsh reaction to his delusions. The Creator forgive me, but I have spent my life ruling people's lives and expecting compliance. Old ways die hard. Now he thinks I intend to inflexibly force him to follow prophecy. He grows increasingly distrustful of us, but not of you."
"He would trust you," Zed told her. "You could lay a hand on him, and he would not suspect anything."
Nikki stared.
"Lay a hand on him?" Zed nodded. "You would have control of him before he ever knew what had happened. He won't feel a thing. When he wakes up, the memory of Cailin Amnell will be wiped away, and he will be our Richard again."
Nikki bit her lower lip, unable to trust her voice. Zed's hazel eyes brimmed with tears.
"I love my grandson dearly. I would do anything for him. I would do this myself if I could do as good a job of it as you. I want him to be well. We all need him well."
He squeezed her shoulder again.
"Nikki, if you love him too, please do this. Please do what only you can do and heal him one more time."
Chapter 56. Master Rawl, guide us. Master Rawl, teach us. Master Rawl, protect us. Cailin murmured yet again. "In your light we thrive. In your mercy we are sheltered. In your wisdom we are humbled. We live only to serve. Our lives are yours." Her shoulders ached from kneeling on the floor with her forehead against the tiles, saying the devotion over and over. Despite the aching fatigue, she didn't really mind it. "Master Rawl, guide us," Cailin said as she started in again in harmony with the joined voices that echoed softly through the marble halls. "Master Rawl, teach us. Master Rawl, protect us. In your light we thrive. In your mercy we are sheltered. In your wisdom we are humbled.
We live only to serve. Our lives are yours. In fact, she found it rather pleasant saying the same words over and over. They filled her mind, helping numb the terrible void. The words made her feel not so alone, so lost. Master Rawl, guide us. Master Rawl, teach us. Master Rawl, protect us. In your light we thrive. In your mercy we are sheltered. In your wisdom we are humbled. We live only to serve. Our lives are yours. Some of those concepts struck a chord with her, and she found them comforting, safe, thriving lives where knowledge and wisdom prevailed. She liked the image of that. Such ideas seemed quite the marvelous dream. The others with her had been in a hurry, but when they'd seen the soldiers look their way, they had decided that they'd better go with the rest of the people collecting in a square that was open to the overcast sky. Under that cloudy sky lay white sand, raked in concentric lines around a dark, pitted rock. On the top of the rock sat a bell in a stout frame. This was the bell that had rung and called all the people together. Pillars supported arches on all four sides of the opening in the roof of the square. On the tile floor among the columns all around Kalin, people were on their knees, bent forward, with their foreheads touching the tile. In unison, everyone chanted the devotion to the Lord Rawl. Right near the end of the next repetition, the bell atop the dark pitted rock rang twice. The voices all around Kalin trailed off as they all finished together with, "Our lives are yours." In the sudden quiet, people rose up on their knees, many of them stretching and yawning before getting to their feet. Conversation welled up again as the people began moving off, going back to their business, to whatever they had been doing before the bell had called them to devotion. When the others with her gestured, Kalin followed the orders and moved off down the passageway, away from the open square. They passed statues and an intersection before they angled their way over to one side of the broad hall. The other three stopped. Kalin stood silently as she waited and watched people going past. The long climb up endless stairs, down miles of corridors, and up random flights of yet more stairs, all after the journey to get there in the first place, had left her dead on her feet. She would have liked to have sat down, but she knew better than to ask. The sisters didn't care if she was exhausted. Worse, though, she could tell how tense and edgy they were, especially after the unexpected interruption for the chanting. They would not react sympathetically or kindly to a request to sit down. With the mood they were in, if Kalin even asked, she knew they would not have the slightest compunctions about beating her. She didn't think that they would do it right there, not with all the people around, but they certainly would later. She stood quietly, trying to be invisible and not draw their ire. She guessed that the kneeling would have to be rest enough. It was all she was going to get. Soldiers in handsome uniforms carrying a variety of polished weapons at the ready patrolled the halls, watching everyone. Each time guards passed, whether in pairs or larger groups, their gazes took careful note of the three women standing with Kalin. When that happened, the three sisters pretended to be looking at statues or some of the rich tapestries of country scenes. One time, to avoid the attention of passing soldiers, they huddled close, pretending to be oblivious of the soldiers, as they pointed out a grand statue of a woman holding a sheaf of wheat as she leaned on a spear. They smiled as they spoke softly among themselves, as if enjoying a pleasant discussion of the artistic merits of the work until the soldiers had gone on past.
"Would you two sit down on that bench?" Sister Yulisha growled. "You look like cats being sniffed by a pack of hounds."
Sisters Tovi and Cecilia, both older, glanced around and saw the bench a few steps behind them, up against the white marble wall. They scooped their dresses under their legs as they sat beside each other. Tovi, as heavy as she was, appeared especially weary. Her wrinkled face was red as a beet from kneeling with her face to the floor. Cecilia, always tidy, used the opportunity provided by sitting on the bench to fuss with her gray hair.
Kalin started for the bench, relieved at last to have a chance to sit.
Not you, Sister Eulicia snapped. No one is going to notice you. Just stand there beside them so I will be better able to keep an eye on you.
Sister Eulicia lifted an eyebrow in warning.
Yes, Sister Eulicia, Kalin said.
Sister Eulicia expected an answer when she spoke. Kalin had learned that lesson the hard way, and would have answered sooner had she not stopped really listening after she'd been told that the offer to sit didn't include her. She reminded herself that even if she was tired, she had better pay more attention, or she would earn a slap for now, and a lot worse later. Sister Eulicia did not look away, or allow Kalin to, but instead placed the tip of her stout oak rod under Kalin's chin and used it to forcefully tilt her head up.
The day is not over yet. You still have your part to do. You had better not even think of letting me down in any way. Do you understand?
Yes, Sister Eulicia.
Good. We're all just as tired as you, you know.
Kalin wanted to say that they may be tired, but they had ridden horses. Kalin always had to walk and keep up with their horses. Sometimes she had to trot or even run to keep from falling behind. Sister Eulicia was never pleased if she had to turn her horse and go back to collect her lagging slave. Kalin glanced around the passageway at all the wondrous things displayed. Her curiosity overcame her caution.
Sister Eulicia, what is this place?
The sister tapped her rod against her thigh as she briefly took in her surroundings.
The People's Palace. Quite the beautiful place.
She looked back at Kalin.
This is the home of the Lord Rawl.
She waited, apparently to see if Kalin would say anything. Kalin had nothing to say.
Lord Rawl? You know the man we've been praying to, Richard Rawl, to be precise. He is the Lord Rawl now.
Sister Eulicia's eyes narrowed.
Have you ever heard of him, my dear?
Kalin thought about it. Lord Rawl. Lord Richard Rawl. Her mind seemed empty. She wanted to think things to remember, but she couldn't. She guessed that there was simply nothing for her to remember.
No, sister, I don't believe I have ever heard of the Lord Rawl.
Well, Sister Eulicia said with that sly smile she brought out from time to time, I don't suppose you would. After all, who are you, just a nobody, a nothing, a slave?
Kalin swallowed back her urge to protest.
How could she?
What would she say?
Sister Eulicia's smile widened. It seemed her eyes could look right down into Kalin's soul.
Isn't that right, my dear? You are a worthless slave who is fortunate for the charity of a meal.
Kalin wanted to object. To say that she was more, to say that her life had value and was worthwhile, but she knew that such things were only a dream. She was tired to the bone. Now her heart felt heavy too.
Yes, Sister Eulicia.
Whenever she tried to think about herself, there was only an empty void. Her life seemed so barren. She didn't think it was supposed to be, but it was. Sister Eulicia turned when she noticed Kalin's gaze going to the returning Sister Armina, a mature woman with a straightforward personality. Sister Armina's dark blue dress swished as she hurried down the wide corridor in a weaving course to make her way among the people strolling through the palace engaged in conversation and not watching where they were going.
Well,
Sister Eulicia asked when Sister Armina reached them.
I got caught up in a mass chanting to our Lord Rawl.
Sister Eulicia sighed.
Us two, what did you find?
This is the place, just behind me at the next intersection, then down the hall to the right. We need to be careful, though.
Why?
Sister Eulicia asked as Sisters Tovi and Cecilia hurried close to listen. The four sisters put their heads closer.
The doors are right there at the side of the hallway. There isn't any way to go in there without being seen, at least for us. It's pretty clear that no one is supposed to even think of going in there.
Sister Yulisha glanced up and down the hall to make sure no one was paying them any heed.
What do you mean it's pretty clear?
The doors are made specifically to warn people away. They have snakes carved on them.
Kaylin shrank back. She hated snakes.
Sister Yulisha slapped her rod against her leg as she pressed her lips together. Fuming, she finally turned her sour visage on Kaylin.
You remember your instructions?
Yes, sister, Kaylin answered immediately. She wanted to get it over with. The sooner the sisters were happy, the better. It was getting late in the day. The long climb up through the inside of the plateau and then the chanting had taken more time than the sisters had expected. They had thought they would be finished and on their way by now. Kaylin was hoping that when she was done, they could make camp and get some sleep. They never let her get enough sleep. Setting up camp meant more work for her, but at least there was sleeping to look forward to, as long as she didn't earn the sisters' displeasure and a beating.
All right. This actually makes little practical difference. We will just have to stand off a little farther than we planned, that's all.
Sister Yulisha scratched her cheek as an excuse to take a careful look, checking for guards before leaning in again.
Cecilia, you stay here and watch this end of the hall for any sign of trouble. Armina, you go back past the entrance and watch the other side. Start now so that it doesn't look like we're together as we near the doors, in case they're being watched.
Sister Armina flashed a crafty grin.
I will saunter down the halls and look like an odd visitor until she's done.
Without further word, she hurried off.
Toby, Sister Yulisha said, you come with me. We'll be two friends walking and chatting while visiting the Lord Rawl's grand palace. Meanwhile, Kaylin will be seeing to her tasks.
Sister Yulisha snatched Kaylin's upper arm and spun her around.
Come on!
With a shove, Kaylin was pushed on ahead of them. She hiked her pack up as she was hurried along. Together, the two sisters followed her down the hall. As they reached the intersection where they had to turn right, two big soldiers came around toward them. They gave Sister Toby only a passing glance, but they smiled at Sister Yulisha's smile. Sister Yulisha could appear innocently enchanting when she wanted to, and she was attractive enough that men paid her notice. No one noticed Kaylin.
Here, Sister Yulisha said. Stop here.
Kaylin halted, staring across the hall at the thick mahogany doors. The snakes carved in the doors stared back at her. Their tails coiled around branches carved into the tops of the doors. The snakes' bodies hung down so that the heads were at eye level. Fangs jutted out from gaping jaws, as if the pair were about to strike. Kaylin couldn't imagine why anyone would carve such hideous creatures indoors. Everything else in the palace was beautiful, but these doors were not.
Sister Yulisha leaned close. You remember all of your instructions?
Kaylin nodded.
Yes, sister. If you have any questions, ask them now.
No, sister. I remember everything you told me. Kaylin wondered why it was that she could remember some things so well, but so many other things seemed lost in a fog.
And don't dawdle, Toby said. No, Sister Toby, I won't. We need what you're being sent to recover for us, and we need it without any foolishness.
Malevolence gleamed in Toby's eyes.
Do you understand, girl?
Kaylin swallowed. Yes, Sister Toby.
You'd better, Toby said, or you'll answer to me, and you would not want that, believe me.
I understand, Sister Toby. Kaylin knew that Toby was deadly serious. The woman was usually relatively even-tempered, but when provoked, she could turn vicious in a flash. Worse, once she started in, she enjoyed seeing others helpless and in agony.
Go on, then, Sister Yulisha said, and don't forget, don't talk to anyone. If the men up there say anything, just ignore them. They will leave you be.
The look in Sister Yulisha's eyes gave Kaylin pause. She nodded before hurrying off across the hall. Her exhaustion forgotten, she knew what she had to do, and she knew that if she didn't,
there would be trouble. At the doors, she grasped one of the handles that looked like a grinning skull, only made of bronze. She deliberately didn't look at the snakes as she put her muscle into pulling open the heavy door. Inside, she paused, letting her eyes adjust to the dim light of lamps. The thick carpets of golds and blues quieted the room and prevented any of the echoes like there were in so many of the halls. The intimate room, paneled in the same mahogany as the tall doors, seemed a quiet refuge from the sometimes noisy palace. With the door closed behind her, she realized that she was finally, totally away from the four sisters. She couldn't remember a time when she had ever been alone from them. At least one of the sisters was always watching her, watching their slave. She didn't know why they watched her so closely. After all, Kaelin had never actually tried to escape. She had often used to seriously consider it, but she had never actually gotten to the point of trying it. Just the thought of trying to escape from the sisters brought on such terrible pain that it made her feel like blood would run from her ears and nose, and that her eyes would surely burst. When she thought of leaving the sisters and the pain closed in to bear down on her, she couldn't get the thought out of her head fast enough, and even then the pain lingered. Such an episode usually left her so sick to her stomach that it was hours before she could even stand, much less walk. The sisters always knew when it happened, probably because they found her in a heap on the ground. When the pain in her head finally faded, they beat her. The worst was Sister Eulicia, because she used the stout stick she always carried. It left welts that were slow to heal. Some still had not healed. This time, though, they had ordered Kaelin to leave them and go in alone. They had told her that it would not bring on the pain so long as she kept to her instructions. It felt so good to be away from those four terrible women that Kaelin thought she might cry with joy. Inside the room, though, were four big guards to replace the four sisters. She paused, unsure what to do. Serpents on one side of a door with serpents carved on it, and serpents on the other. She seemed never to be able to find any peace. Kaelin stood frozen for a moment, afraid to try to go past the guards, afraid of what they might do to her for being in a place that she so obviously did not belong. They were staring at her in a most curious way. Kaelin gathered her courage, hooked some of her long hair behind an ear, and started for the stairwell she saw across the room. Two guards stepped together to block her way.
"Where do you think you're going?"
one of them asked her. Kaelin kept her head down and kept moving. She turned a little sideways to be able to slip between them. As she went past, the second guard said to the first,
"What did you say?"
The first man, who had asked Kaelin where she thought she was going, stared at him.
"What? I didn't say anything."
As Kaelin made it to the stairs, the other two guards strolled over to the ones who had tried to block Kaelin's path.
"What are you two babbling about?"
one of them asked. The first waved a hand.
"Nothing, it's nothing."
Kaelin hurried up the stairs as fast as her tired legs would carry her. She paused on the broad landing to catch her breath, but she knew she dared not rest for long. She grabbed the polished stone handrail and hurried on up the rest of the way. A soldier at the top immediately turned to the sound of her footsteps. He stared at her as she climbed up into the hallway. She rushed past him. He paused only briefly before turning and ambling off to continue his patrol. There were other men in the hall, soldiers. Soldiers everywhere. Lord Rawl had a lot of soldiers, all of them huge, intent-looking men. Kaelin swallowed in wide-eyed fright at seeing so many soldiers in the way of what she had been told to do. If they slowed her, Sister Eulicia would not be understanding nor forgiving. Some of the soldiers saw Kaelin and started her way, but when they reached her, they lost their intent gazes and walked right by. As Kaelin hurried along the hall, other guards turned urgently to officers, but then, when questioned, said that it was nothing and to forget it. Other men lifted an arm to point, only to then let the arm drop before continuing on their way. As the men saw her and at the same time forgot her, Kaylin steadily made her way down the hall toward where she had been told she had to go. It concerned her, though, that so many of the men were carrying crossbows. The men with the crossbows wore black gloves. Their cocked weapons were loaded with deadly-looking red-fletched arrows. Sister Eulicia had told Kaylin that as part of the magic that brought on the pain to prevent her from escaping, she was shrouded by webs of magic that kept people from noticing her. Kaylin tried to think of why the sister would do such a thing, but her thoughts simply would not connect, would not link together into understanding. It was the most ghastly thing, not being able to make herself think about specific things when she wanted to. She would start out with the question, then the answer would begin to form, but simply run out as if there was nothing more there. Despite the conjured shroud around her, though, Kaylin knew that if one of the soldiers pointed his crossbow at her and pulled the bolt release before he forgot her, she would be dead. She wouldn't mind being dead, because it would at least mean being freed of the anguish that was her life. But Sister Eulicia had warned her that the sisters had great influence with the Keeper of the Dead. Sister Eulicia said that if Kaylin ever thought to slip away from her duties to them by slipping the bounds of the world of the living and taking the long journey into the world of the dead, she would find that it was no refuge and in fact would prove to be a far worse place. It was then that Sister Eulicia had told Kaylin that they were Sisters of the Dark, as if to drive home the veracity of the warning. Kaylin hadn't really needed the assurance. She had always been sure that any of the four sisters could chase her down any hole and get her, even if that hole was a grave like the one they'd opened one dark night for reasons Kaylin couldn't even imagine and didn't want to know. Looking into the sisters' terrible eyes, Kaylin had known that she was hearing the truth. After that, while death invited her with release, it also terrified her with dark promises. She didn't know if this had always been her life, the life of chattel belonging to others. No matter how hard she tried, though, she could remember no other. As she slipped by men patrolling, she made her way through a series of intersections that Sister Eulicia had drawn in the dirt for her at various camps as they traveled. The sister had used her oak rod to diagram the hall so that Kaylin would know where she had to go. As she moved through those halls she had memorized, no one ever tried to stop her. In a way, it was depressing that the men paid her no heed. It was the same everywhere, though. No one ever noticed her, or if they did, they immediately disregarded her and went back to their own business. She was a slave, without her own life. She belonged to others. It made her feel invisible, insignificant, unimportant, a nobody. Sometimes, like when making the long underground climb up into the palace, Kaylin would see men and women together, smiling, an arm around each other, touching one another. She tried to imagine what that would feel like to have someone care about her, cherish her, to cherish them. Kaylin swiped a tear off her cheek. She knew she would never have that. Slaves did not have a life of their own. They were used for their master's purposes. Sister Eulicia had made that very clear. One day, when Sister Eulicia had gotten that vicious look in her eyes that she sometimes got, she said that she was thinking of having Kaylin bred so that she could produce them an offspring. But how did it come to be this way? Where had she come from? Surely everyone's past didn't evaporate out of their minds the way Kaylin's had. In the fog of her thoughts, she couldn't make her mind work the problem through. She asked the question, but the concept seemed to be soaked up into a dim haze of nothingness. She hated the way she couldn't think. Why could other people think while she could not? Even that question quickly faded away into irrelevance among the mire of twisting shadows, just the way she faded away when people saw her. Kaylin stopped when she arrived at a pair of huge doors covered in gold. The doors looked like Sister Eulicia had said they would, a scene of rolling hills and forests, all sheathed in gold. Kaylin looked both ways, then put all her weight into the task of pulling one of the massive doors open enough to slip inside. She took a last look, but none of the guards were watching her. She pulled the door closed behind herself.
It was much brighter inside than the hallway had been. Even though it was an overcast day, the skylights let in a flood of light that lit a most astonishing garden. Sister Eulicia had told her about the garden in general terms, but for Kaelin to see it up here in the palace was beyond anything she had imagined. The place was wondrous. Richard Rawl was a lucky man to have such a garden that he could visit any time he wanted. She wondered if he would come and visit while she was in there, and see her, and then forget her. Remembering her task, Kaelin admonished herself to keep her mind on what she had been sent to do. She hurried down one of the paths through a sprawl of flower beds. The ground was littered with fallen red and yellow petals. She wondered if Richard Rawl picked flowers here for his lady love. She liked the sound of his name. It had a comforting ring to it. Richard Rawl. Richard. She wondered what he was like, if he was as pleasant as his name was to her ear. As she made her way along the path, Kaelin gazed up at the small trees growing all about her. She loved the trees. They reminded her of something. She growled in frustration. She hated it when she couldn't remember things that she was sure were important. Even if they weren't important, she hated forgetting things. It was like forgetting parts of who she was. She hurried past shrubs and vine-covered stone walls until she reached the grassy place that Sister Eulicia said would be there in the center of the garden. Across the way, the grassy ring was broken by a wedge of stone atop which sat a slab of granite, looking much like a table. Atop the granite slab were supposed to be things Kaelin had been sent to retrieve. Seeing them suddenly, she quailed. The three objects were as black as death itself. They looked as if they were sucking in the light from the room, from the skylights, from the very sky, and trying to swallow it all. Her heart hammering with dread, Kaelin rushed across the grass to the granite table. Being that close to such sinister-looking objects made her nervous. She slipped the shoulder straps off and set the pack down beside the black boxes she had been sent to recover. Her bedroll, lashed underneath, made the pack not want to sit up, so she had to lean it a little to the side. She laid her hand on the bedroll for a moment, feeling the soft contour of what was rolled up inside. It was her most precious possession. She remembered then that she had better get back to business. She immediately realized, though, that she was going to have a problem. The boxes were bigger than Sister Eulicia had said she thought they would be. They were each nearly as big as a loaf of bread. There was no way they would all fit in her pack. But those had been her explicit instructions, the wishes of the sisters conflicted with the reality that the boxes weren't going to fit. There was no way to satisfy the contradiction. Memories of previous punishments flashed through her mind, bringing a sheen of sweat to her brow. She wiped the sweat from her eyes as the visions of torture came back to her. This, of all things, she cursed silently. She had to remember. Kaelin decided that there was nothing else she could do. She would have to try. At the same time, she also fretted about stealing things out of Lord Rawl's garden. After all, they didn't belong to the sisters, and Lord Rawl would not have that many men posted all around the garden unless the boxes were important to him. She was no thief, but was it worth the kind of punishment she would receive, should she refuse? Was her blood worth Lord Rawl's treasure? Was Lord Rawl the kind of man who would want her to refuse to steal, and as a result suffer the sisters' torture? She didn't know why, and maybe she was only coddling her doubts. But she told herself that Richard Rawl would say to take the boxes rather than sacrifice her life. She flipped open the top of her pack and attempted to shove things down in tighter. But there was very little give. They were already packed as tightly as they were ever going to pack. With rising worry that she was taking too much time, she pulled on clothes, trying to get something to wrap the first black box in. Out came part of her satiny white dress. Kaelin stared at the silken, nearly white material in her fingers. It was the most beautiful dress she had ever seen. But why would she have it? She was a nobody, a slave. What would a slave be doing with such a beautiful dress? She couldn't make her mind work to answer such a question. The thoughts simply would not come together into answers. Kaylin snatched up one of the boxes and rolled it up in the skirt of the dress and stuffed it all into the pack. She leaned on the box, trying to shove it down deeper, then closed the flap to test the fit. The flap hardly covered the top of the box, and she had only one of them inside. She had to cinch the flap down with the strap just to get it to stay. There was no way in the world that the other boxes were going to fit in her pack. Sister Eulicia had been very explicit that Kaylin had to hide the boxes in her pack, or the soldiers would see them. They would forget Kaylin, but Sister Eulicia had said that the soldiers would recognize the boxes Kaylin was taking out of the garden room, and then they would send up alarms. Kaylin had been told in no uncertain terms that she had to hide the boxes. But she could see that there was no way all three would fit. Around the campfire a few nights before, Sister Eulicia had put her face right up close to Kaylin's and whispered exactly what she would do to Kaylin, should she fail to do as instructed. Kaylin started trembling at the memory of what Sister Eulicia had told her that terrible night. She thought of Sister Tovi and trembled all the more. What was she going to do? Chapter 57. Kaylin pushed open one of the doors with the snakes on the other side of it. Sister Eulicia and Tovi immediately spotted her, and with furtive gestures motioned for her to come to where they waited down the hall. They didn't want to be seen near the doors with the snakes and the skulls. Kaylin crossed the hallway, watching the patterns in the marble floor, not wanting to look up into Sister Eulicia's eyes. As soon as she had walked down the corridor and was close enough, Sister Eulicia snatched Kaylin's shirt at her shoulder and pulled her over to a niche in the far wall. Both sisters, Eulicia and Tovi, caged her in.
"Did anyone try to stop you?"
Sister Tovi asked. Kaylin shook her head. Sister Eulicia let out a sigh.
"Good. Let's see them."
Kaylin drew the pack off one shoulder and pulled it around enough in front so that the sisters could open the flap. Both of them pawed at the strap, cinching it down. They finally got it loose and flipped it back. Both sisters huddled close together, shoulder to shoulder, so that people in the hall couldn't see what they were doing, see what terrible thing they were about to bring out into the light of day. Sister Eulicia carefully pulled off the satiny white fabric of Kaylin's dress, still stuffed partly down into the pack, to see the black box nestled within. Both stood in silent awe, staring. Sister Eulicia, her fingers trembling with excitement, stuck her arm down in and started pawing around, searching for the others. When she didn't find them, she stepped back, a dark look coming over her face.
"Where are the other two?"
Kaylin swallowed. "I could only fit one into the pack, sister. The others wouldn't fit. You told me that I had to conceal them inside, but they were too big. I will..." Before Kaylin could say another word, before she explained that she planned to make two more trips to recover the other boxes, Sister Eulicia, in a rage, whipped her stout rod around so hard that it whistled through the air. Kaylin heard a deafening crack as it hit the side of her head with full force. The world seemed to go silent and black. Kaylin realized that she was on the floor in a heap, crumpled on her knees. She cupped a hand over her left ear, gasping in paralyzing pain. She saw blood splattered all over the floor. She took her hand away and saw that it looked like she was wearing a warm, bloody glove. She could only stare at her hand and pant in little gasps, so crushing was the pain that her voice wouldn't work. She couldn't even cry out in agony. It seemed as if she were looking through a long, fuzzy black tunnel. Her stomach felt queasy. Suddenly, Sister Eulicia seized Kaylin's shirt and hoisted her up from the floor, only to slam her against the wall. Kaylin's head smacked the stone, but compared to the pain radiating from the side of her head, her jaw, and her ear, it seemed inconsequential.
"You stupid bitch!"
Sister Eulicia railed as she pulled Kaylin away and again slammed her against the wall.
"You stupid, incompetent, worthless bitch!"
Tovi looked like she, too, wanted to get her hands on Kaylin. She saw that down the corridor, half of Sister Eulicia's broken rod lay against the wall. Kaylin struggled to find her voice, knowing it was her only salvation.
"Sister Eulicia, I couldn't fit all three inside."
Kaelin could taste salty tears along with blood.
You told me to hide them in my pack. They wouldn't fit. I plan to go back and get them, that's all. Please, I'll go back for the others. I swear I will get them for you.
Sister Yulisha backed away. The smoldering anger in her eyes was frightening. Even though the woman backed away, she pointed at the center of Kaelin's chest with one finger, and Kaelin was slammed hard against the marble and pinned to the wall with a force that felt as massive as a bull leaning against her. It was a struggle to draw each breath against the crushing pressure. It was a struggle to see through the blood running into her eyes.
You should have rolled the other two boxes in your bedroll, then you would have them all right now. Isn't that right?
Kaelin hadn't considered doing that because it wasn't an option.
But, sister, I have something else rolled in the bedroll.
Sister Yulisha leaned in again. Kaelin feared that she was now going to be made to wish she was dead, or fear that she was about to be. She wasn't at all sure which fate would be worse. She felt the pain come on within her head to match the pain on the outside from the blow. Pinned against the wall, Kaelin couldn't fall to the ground, cover her ears, and scream, or she would have.
I don't care what trifle you have rolled up in your bedroll. You should have left it out. The boxes are more important.
Kaelin could only stare, unable to move because of the force keeping her flattened to the wall, and unable to talk because of the force of pain crushing her mind. It felt like ice picks were being slowly shoved and twisted into her ears. Her ankles and wrists twitched involuntarily. She gasped with each throbbing wave of agony wrenching through her head, trying but unable to squirm away from the piercing pain.
Now,
Sister Yulisha said in a low, menacing voice that carried deadly threat,
do you think you can do that? Do you think you can go back up there and roll the other two boxes in your bedroll and bring them back to me like you should have done in the first place?
Kaelin tried to talk but couldn't. She nodded instead, desperate to agree, desperate for the pain to stop. She could feel the blood running from her ear and the side of her head soaking the collar of her shirt. She was on her tiptoes, pressed back, wishing she could melt through the wall in order to get away from Sister Yulisha. The pain wouldn't let up enough for her to catch a breath.
Do you remember seeing some of the hundreds and hundreds of big lonely soldiers quartered down in the lower reaches of this place as we were coming up?
Sister Yulisha asked. Kaelin nodded again.
Well, if you fail me again, then, when I'm done breaking every bone in your body and making you suffer the agony of 1,000 deaths, then I'm going to heal you enough so that I can sell you to those soldiers down there to be their barracks whore. That will be where you spend the rest of your life, being passed from one stranger to another, with no one to care what happens to you.
Kaelin knew that Sister Yulisha never made empty threats. The sister was absolutely ruthless. Kaelin averted her eyes as she sucked back a sob, unable to stand the sister's scrutiny any longer. Sister Yulisha seized Kaelin's jaw and turned her face back.
Are you certain that you understand the price, should you fail me again?
Kaelin, her chin held firm, managed to nod. She felt the pressure pinning her to the wall suddenly release. She collapsed to her knees, gasping with the waves of searing pain all along the left side of her face. She didn't know if any bones were broken, but it certainly felt like it.
What's going on here? A soldier asked.
Sisters Yulisha and Tovi turned and smiled at the man. He glanced down at Kaelin, frowning. She stared up pleadingly at him, hoping to be rescued from these monsters. The man looked up, his mouth open, about to say something to the sisters, but then he never did. He looked from Sister Yulisha's smile to Toby's, and smiled himself.
Is everything all right, ladies?
Oh, yes, Sister Tovi said with a jovial chuckle. We were just about to have a rest on the bench here. I was complaining about my backache, that's all. We were both saying what a nuisance it is to get older.
I guess it is.
He bowed his head.
Good day, then, ladies.
He walked off without ever acknowledging Kaelin's existence. If he saw her, he forgot about her before he could say anything. Kaylin realized that it was the way she, too, seemed to forget things about herself.
Get up,
the voice over her growled. Kaylin struggled to her feet. Sister Yulisha jerked Kaylin's pack around in front again. She flipped back the flap and dragged out the sinister black box wrapped in Kaylin's satiny white dress. She handed the bundle to Sister Tovey.
We've already been here too long. We're starting to draw attention. Take this and get going.
This is the end of disc number 19. Please insert disc number 20.